In today's podcast, we talk about Cafe Society and Captain Fantastic. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Hello.
We are enjoying our way through some delicious scones that Yazdi...
Baked us.
Baked
fresh.
Upon arrival. We're recording from Yazdi's house today.
Where we always get delightful treats.
Where that's one of the benefits of recording from Yazdi's house.
Yeah, it really is.
You come round, you get fed.
It's a Saturday afternoon. Isn't that what everybody does?
But this tea is delicious. I don't know what you put in this entire scone?
Yes, you may take. There's more.
Oh, no. This is my second one.
I had two already, Rashmi. Come on, you're lagging. The tea is delicious. Should I make some more?
No, it's delicious. What did you put in it? Like crack cocaine or something? Yes.
This deserves an Instagram as well.
It has lemongrass and mint.
It's so tasty.
Mm-hmm. And brown sugar.
It's so tasty.
To check out Yazdi's scones. That could really go into bad places.
And the tea is delicious. This tea was so good.
Mine was done like an hour ago.
Mine's done too.
Okay.
I drank it.
I still have some remaining.
I want to heat yours up and have yours.
You're not going to drink it.
This is raspberry. Because I take my time with tea and I can drink it cold.
But then it's like horse's piss.
Exactly. That's my
That's
point.
That's my mom used to
well,
say.
Well,
is that really what your mom used to
say? No, my mom still says, you know, if the tea is like 30 seconds, you know.
Yeah,
off, cool. Yeah, cool. She's like, now it's like horse's piss. I would think horse's piss would be pretty warm, though.
I should give it a try. I mean, clearly I must like it because that's how I drink my tea.
Well, this was nothing like horse's piss. It was very, very delicious.
What kind of tea was this, Yazdi? It had all sorts of delicious things in it.
Mint, lemongrass, brown sugar.
It's Taj Mahal Indian tea, but lemongrass, mint.
Loose leaf.
No, tea bag.
Tea bags.
Tea bag.
Love it.
But then you add...
I had
some Yazdi things.
Fresh mint, fresh... oh, God, make it sound so sordid. No, fresh mint, fresh lemongrass and brown sugar.
Rashmi, why don't you make tea like this?
She does make tea like that. She has elychee in hers.
Correct. You don't like cardamoms.
This is true. This is very nice tea.
You don't like cardamoms?
They are the bane of Joe's life.
The problem is, I attract cardamoms.
All cardamom-containing projects gravitate towards you.
Absolutely. I'm not calling Rashmi a cardamom either.
Oh, God.
But seriously, Rashmi can make a big pot of food.
Yep.
With one cardamom, small one in there.
Mm-hmm.
Guaranteed. Not only does it end up in my plate,
but
it ends up on my spoon or on my fork. And then I bite the darn thing, and then that's all I can taste for a week.
Yep.
So
I have
cardamoms
to count them
and I have
and
a very...
Count them out now.
Yeah.
Which you don't always do successfully, but you do warn me these days.
Yeah.
There's one that's rogue and I always get it. So it's easy. Just give me a spoon, put it into a pot. If I'm eating from that spoon, there will be a cardamom on it.
Well, you should just get it over with. Just swallow it and be done with
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
And then enjoy the rest of the meal.
Hate them, I hate them.
Okay,
so before we get into our movies for the week, we thought we could do our usual I can't find anything on Netflix. So guys, what have you got in your queues this week?
Should I go?
Yes, please.
So what I have on by way of Netflix recommendation is a movie called Backtrack. And this is a movie that stars Adrian Brody and Sam O'Neill. And I know I saw this at the Tribeca Film Festival last year. I think, Rashmi, did you see it or Joe?
No.
I did see
you
it.
You see
yes.
it. Remember it was
the car accident.
The car accident, supernatural horror movie. And I dislike horror movies. This is not horror, but it's
a thriller.
Plenty scary. It's a good thriller.
Really?
And it's a shame because the plot is pretty convoluted and the plot gets to pretty dark places. And I'm kind of disappointed this movie didn't even get a minimal theatrical release. It's come straight to Netflix. But, you know, make their loss, you know, your benefit. This is a fun little thriller. It's, you know, it always keeps you guessing. It's kind of a ghost story. I was scared through a big part of it. And it has a nice little twist at the end. Adrian Brody, Sam O'Neill, and I think Sarah Snook is also in it. So I would recommend.
Yeah,
that.
No, good pick, Yasdi. I mean, it's one that I watched with intrigue, but it certainly left an impression on me because Adrian Brody is excellent in this, and I keep thinking he's one of the underrated actors out there. He takes on these little roles. I don't know whether that's just because that's what he can get, or what, or this is the type of work that he chooses to do. But he's perfectly cast here because he has that kind of, you know, anxious, concerned look about him. And there's a psychological component to what's happening around him. You don't quite know what's going on. And the movie is called Backtrack for a reason. It plays around with sequence. Really, yeah, very, very interesting pick. And again, it's one that I think, just give it a shot. And I would say give it 10, 15 minutes because it's quite easy to tune out. I think when, you know, in a theatre environment, I was kind of committed to seeing the whole thing. And it took me a while to kind of figure out how I felt. And then you start becoming very interested in the events.
Adrian Brody is such a chameleon. I mean, I just did a write-up on a film called Septembers of Shiraz, where he's actually playing the main lead, and he's actually playing someone who's Persian during the Iran Revolution. And he was amazing in that. And then I, you know, remember him from A Midnight in Paris playing Salvador Dali equally well. So, yeah, I think he's an amazing chameleon.
Yeah, well, at least he's got an Oscar, so I don't feel so bad. But he needs to kind of bump up his game and get back into the swing of things. In this movie, he's, at least the first half hour seems to me like a ghost movie. It's kind of hard to tell if he is being haunted by a ghost, and I think those scenes are done remarkably well because you don't know if is it all in his head or is there a real ghost, or, you know, so it has a, it's, you know, seeing how many of those movies have been made before, it's pretty efficiently done. I really was scared for him. There's a great scene with the train at the start of the movie.
I remember this movie. I was there. Okay, now it's finally come to me. I had to backtrack in my head.
Yes, remember with the train? Yes.
Yes, this was a very interesting movie.
Yes. So we all saw it. Backtrack.
Yes, okay. This was good.
Yes.
Ask me, what's your pick?
My pick is a classic. I'm kind of doing classics at the moment. What's Not to Love About To Kill a Mockingbird? This is one of my favorite books of all time. And actually, this is a movie that I felt was a very good version of the book. This did justice to the wonderful book written by Harper Lee. And it stars Gregory Peck as the lovely Atticus Finch. And Robert Duvall plays Boo Radley, which is amazing.
Very young.
Very young. Very young. Just a wonderful movie. I watched this when I was very young. I read the book when I was very young, and this is beautiful. This is a movie that I think can have a huge impact on kids of a certain age, and all kids of a certain age should be required to watch this movie.
You stole the words
very
from my mouth.
Very relevant to what's going on now, even.
I think this is a must for, you know, if you have kids of a certain age, you have to sit them down. It's in black and white, but you have to make them watch it because it's hard to believe this was done, what, 50, 60 years ago, and all the themes of it are relevant right now in 2016. It's about racial injustice. It's about standing up to what you believe in. It's about going against, you know, a world gone crazy. It's about overcoming your fears. It's about coming to terms with, you know, finding your place in the world. It's just, and, you know, Gregory Peck is Atticus Finch.
Yeah, 1962.
Yes. Gosh, 50 years old and hasn't lost any of its relevance.
Nope.
It's in my queue. I'll have to watch it because I've not finished the book and I've not seen the movie.
I made Joe read the book, yeah.
So, yeah, no, the book, it's kind of a slow burn. I've been reading it book on tape, but the movie, I think, has been unanimously praised for decades now. So, yeah, definitely great pick, Rashmi. And I'm going to go cheap, so
showgirls.
Well, cheap in the context of, you know, a lot of my picks end up being these bigger movies that have, you know, had everyone knows them. But Jurassic Park is one that has recently had a release on Netflix. I think in part it's to, you know, capitalize on some of the momentum that the Jurassic Park movie from last year had. And you know, I haven't rewatched it for a long time. I think catch it on TV, parts of it just prior to the release of I forget the name of last year's Jurassic World. Mm-hmm. At the time, this movie blew me away. I mean, you know, I don't know that anyone hasn't seen it, but I think Spielberg really did a wonderful job of directing what was a movie with very little plot in a way that was as suspenseful and frightening and imaginative as Jaws. You know, there are so many wonderful directorial moments in Jurassic Park, if any of you can remember the pool.
The toilet.
The Velociraptor scenes and, you know, just the way that we had the presence of these huge creatures. For the first time, despite having a pretty good imagination as a kid, first time I could really see what these monsters would have looked like walk the earth with us. So Jurassic Park, out on Netflix, go check it out. So Jurassic Park, we have To Kill a Mockingbird and Backtrack. So go check them out. Okay, two movies to review this week. Woody Allen, Rashmi's favorite, Cafe Society, and we also have Captain Fantastic.
I've been dying to speak to you both about these movies since we watched them.
So why don't we start with Cafe Society before Rashmi bursts the gaskets.
Out of her chair. My favourite day of the year, our 2016 entry from writer, director and narrator for this movie, Woody Allen. So this is set in the 1930s, where a young Bronx native moves to Hollywood, where he falls in love with the secretary of his powerful uncle, who happens to be an agent to the stars. After returning to New York, he is swept up in the vibrant world of high society nightclub life. So this stars Jesse Eisenberg, Kristen Stewart, Steve Carell, Blake Lively, Parker Posey, Corey Stoll, many, many others. And some quite fun little cameos from people as well. So I know the two of you aren't as big fans of Woody Allen as I am. Yazdi, I will let you go first.
So Woody Allen, when he's good, he's so good. Unfortunately, you know, you have to go two or three movies before you catch one which is so good. And you know, Match Point, it's you know, unimprovable. Midnight in Paris is unimprovable. Even Blue Jasmine is an instant classic. Cafe Society comes very close for me. I was very surprised at how I thought this would be one of his more dispensable kind of, you know, mildly amusing movies, but it kind of amounts to a lot, and he gets away with a lot. He plays with very familiar themes, and yet the movie is never predictable. And we'll talk about this. It's absolutely achingly beautiful to look at, and it has a few things to say. So this one really surprised me in terms of how much it got to me, considering that Alan doesn't always speak to me as consistently.
Joe.
You know, this is one of those reviews where I'm going to, right off the bat, have to do a little bit of a disclaimer here. I was exhausted on the day that this movie was screened, and so I had a hard time staying through it. Very busy day at work, very poor sleep the night before. So I did struggle to get through this one, but I'm not going to lay that at the blame. I'm not going to blame that on the movie. I think my impressions of the movie were certainly that it was very funny. I think it had some you know, wonderful humorous moments in it. Yesterday I didn't get the sense of depth, but again, I think, you know, I'm you know, in full honesty, disclaimer, not going to properly review this movie. But again, I think the beauty of the movie is something that is very apparent. This is a new level for Alan. I don't know that I've seen this level of kind of costume and just technically well-crafted movie. It just feels so polished all the way through. So from a technical perspective, I really admired the movie. But again, not a great deal to say about content. I'll leave it to you guys.
Yeah, I agree with you, Yasti. The last two, you know, Rational Man, Magic in the Moonlight, have felt a little bit more disposable to me, even though I enjoy them. Mm-hmm. I love Woody Allen. Because they lack that emotional heft. This one, I feel, just really brought it again. I think I probably hold in recent times Match Point as one of the best movies by him. This isn't as severe as that, but I think this is a layered movie. I feel like this is the ultimate love letter to unrequited love, bathed in golden light. This is an ode to what the heart that the heart wants, what the heart wants. And I just love that about this movie, and I think this had some really exceptional performances. I never thought I'd say this. Kristen Stewart and Corey Stoll stole the show.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about it. Kristen Stewart does some remarkable line readings. And even as I was watching, I was thinking, wow, some other actor might have really messed up this line or might have not been able to bring out the meaning of that line. But her line readings are exquisite. And it's everybody has difficult roles, but her role in particular is so slippery. I kind of see her as Daisy from The Great Gatsby.
Yes.
In terms of her moral compass, if you will. But it's a very difficult role. And Kristen Stewart is, quite up to the task. She holds that movie, I think, together. And I don't think she's ever looked better. She really looks good in this movie. That whole 30s getup is, it's very, very flattering to her. But set aside her looks, I think she's quite something, yeah.
Alan has a way of drawing performances from all of his actors. And, I mean, Rashmi, you've read and watched a lot about his technique here. He seems to do it without, directing.
He's actively directing, yeah.
But he also has very high standards, and he'll tell them when he's, when they're not up to scratch. And you can just see everyone here stepped up their game.
Yeah.
I mean, even the small role, there's a lovely scene in the beginning with Anna Camp.
I was going to say the same thing.
From True Blood, who we know as the crazy evangelist.
She's in Pitch Perfect, yes.
I actually found that scene a little disturbing, but carry on.
Well, but, just in terms of what she brought in a very short period of time, and what that scene said about the characters and the world in which they lived, was just so well done. So I always admire what Alan can get actors to do. And you can't take away his ability to write here. Mm-hmm. He has a way of writing dialogue that's very natural, that has a voice. I mean, I think these lines would jump off a page regardless of the character. So when you have an actor breathe life into them, you just get this chemistry. And when it works, it works.
Yeah, I mean, he's able to get into morally naughty issues with a lot of clarity. There's a cleanliness, at least to this script. It's very clean, but he still gets into very turbulent territory in terms of, at some point, there just isn't a good person in the whole, everybody is human. Everybody is very, very much human. Everybody is flawed. And it's dangerous to go there because, the audience might just give up on not being able to have somebody they can latch on to. But he kind of somehow, he seems to somehow make adultery charming. God help us all.
Yeah, I think it's. I wouldn't go as far as that. Yes, yeah. I think he makes each character charming. Each character in a Woody Allen movie comes with a life before. I always say this: you can imagine they had a life before, and they'll have a life after. And if we visited that universe, they would be living their lives. I think that's one of the things he manages to do really, really well. I think what he does is he doesn't shy away from showing us that there isn't a black and white in most situations. There's a gray area. And I think he plays in that gray area. And he plays really well. And so I think that by the mere fact that most other people don't play as well in that gray area, he looks very good when he does it.
Yeah.
And clearly this is his voice. I mean, Jesse Eisenberg is Woody Allen, I think, in this movie. It's a form of Woody Allen, which I think he does really, really well.
Yeah, we need to talk about that. This is Jesse Eisenberg was in that other movie as well. But which was that movie?
Magic in the Moonlight?
No, the one which came after that.
Irrational Man.
No, the one before that.
Blue Jasmine.
No, it had Penelope Cruz in it.
Italy. From Italy.
To Rome with Love.
To Rome with Love,
so
yeah.
Jesse Eisenberg was in it. But in this movie in particular, Jesse Eisenberg is... his delivery and his cadence and his movements are so deliberate. It almost seems like he's very, very actively trying to emulate Woody Allen.
Yes, I agree.
I don't know if Allen, you know, himself encouraged that, or, you know, Eisenberg took it upon himself, but it kind of was a little disturbing to me to have an actor not just inhabit the Woody Allen role, but actually try to kind of copy him, you know, his
that neurosis.
The neurosis, but not just his intonations, the way he was talking sounded very Woody Allen to me. Now, of course, like most of his movies, the lead male character is a sit-in for Woody Allen himself. And you can see all the Woody Allenisms here in this movie. It's about, you know, this neurotic, nebbishy, nerdy guy who, you know, much to everybody's surprise, has two absolutely gorgeous women pining for him. You know, Blake Lively and Kristen Stewart here. It's about the inherent conflict that he's always had from, you know, going all the way back to Annie Hall between, you know, New York versus California. And you see that year, it's about, you know, this families and, you know, how they interact with each other. You know, it's one of the themes close to his heart. You see that year as well. So he's playing with a lot of the usual pawns that you know, on his chess game. But still, I think that 30s setting, I think when he works vintage, it really raises his game. I mean, Magic in the Moonlight, you know, when it moves back into an earlier time, was just magical. And this, I think this 30s
Midnight
setup,
in Paris.
Did I say Magic in the Moonlight? Yeah. Sorry, that's another movie. Midnight in Paris.
Well, you knew what you meant.
Yeah,
but this, I mean, this whole 30s, you know, and we should talk about the production design, but it really ups his game.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, the one thing, and again, I admit to being very tired, so I'm actually not going to go and score this movie. I don't think it's fair to do so, but it felt very amorphous to me. I mean, the plot didn't feel like it flowed. It just felt kind of amorphous to me. Did anyone else feel that? I mean, okay, so
I know what you mean.
It was a reflection of my fatigue,
perhaps.
I mean, this movie didn't have like it didn't feel like it had a strong.
It's not plotty.
Plot.
Yeah, it's not plotty. It's more a character exploration for me, I think.
It is, and there are many characters that he gets into your. I know exactly what you mean. I don't think the movie by any stretch follows the typical, you know,
three act
structure at all. And one of the best things I loved about the movie, and I almost hesitate to say it, is the ending. Because the ending completely caught me by surprise, because I thought the movie was going a particular way. And I liked how it ends. And I know that's where some of your earlier comments came from, Rashmi. But I think it's deliberate, and he's kind of masterly at lulling you into thinking that it's going a particular way. And then by virtue of how the movie ends, the cards are revealed in terms of what he has to say about this.
But that's the genius of it, right? Yeah. Because it's not black and white.
Yeah.
And life isn't black and white.
And I think it's very representative of life because, you know, I just last Sunday I went for my graduate school reunion because my thesis advisor, she...
That's right, yeah.
You know, she was retiring after 30 long years of teaching. And I met so many people who meant so much to me and who were people I spent every day with there. And it was interesting for me to look back on how kind of episodic your interactions with people you really care for are. You know, they mean a lot over a certain period of time, then you drift away, then they come back into your life. And if the movie feels choppy, I think maybe I'm giving too much credit to Woody Allen, but I think he wants to relay that this is the nature of, you know, the great loves. You know, people kind of meet and they go away and meet and all that kind of stuff. They come in and out of your life. So anyway,
yeah, I mean, I was going to say that I feel so wistful. I don't know why. I wanted to say I did like the chemistry between Jesse Eisenberg and Kristen Stewart, and then I realized that they made American Ultra.
Oh, and before that, they did Adventureland.
Yeah, exactly. So I think this is a really good pairing, and you know, good on Woody Allen for kind of cashing in on that. I also want to give a shout out to Steve Carell. You know, Steve Carell, we typically know him as a comedy actor, and you know, I was fascinated when he did the DuPont in Foxcatcher, where he was amazing playing Sirius. I know Yazzie didn't like it. I really liked him in this role because I almost felt like he was Andy Garcia-esque. Physicality-wise, like physically, he looked good. He looked the part. Like, this was believable. It would be easy to kind of write him off. But...
No, he's always great when he does the serious stuff.
He's very good in this. He's really, really good. But there's some comedy in it too, right? Which I really, really like.
Remember Little Miss Sunshine?
Yes.
And, Dan in Real Life. I mean, when he does serious stuff, he's very good. I almost wondered if he was wearing prosthetics. You know, even on his body, he seemed kind of rather large in the movie. And I don't know if, you know, if they made him be so, but yeah.
Yeah. And again, I know you've mentioned this a few times. Let's talk about the production, because for me, the production is exquisite and the costumes are enviable. If I could go out to a store and buy all of those costumes that the women wore, I would be there right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the 30s, you know, you see a lot of 20s in the movies, the whole flapper scene, and then you seem to jump into the 50s and 40s, and you don't see much of 30s. And
unless they're war movies, right?
Unless they're war movies, exactly. You don't see 30s in kind of a glamorous light. And, you know, it's just that whole art deco. And, you know, it's very lovingly photographed, especially the California of the 30s.
Yes.
And there's a lot of outdoor scenes. And I think there are certain parts of Hollywood which have kind of stayed the same through the 30s. And he has kind of gone after them. But I think it's funny, you know, if you look at the very early Woody Allen stuff, it kind of seems a little rough around the edges visually. But I think, as you noticed,
I mean,
of late, his movies are just visually so pleasing. And I don't think, yes, I've seen a prettier looking movie from Woody Allen than Cafe Society. I mean, every scene, the club is so exquisite, you know, the offices and the hotel rooms and everything looks beautifully
it's
done.
It's elegant. This is a really elegant movie.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's focused in the past very much on location. So, you know, he goes to these different European cities. And essentially, you know, part of the movie ends up being his kind of love affair with that locale, you know. As, you know, Midnight in Paris is a great one because, mm-hmm, you know, you have that kind of big opening montage of just, you know, still after still after still of scenes in Paris. He doesn't have that to rely on here, and I think instead his set builders, his costume designers have brought a richness to this world that it's sumptuous to look at. It's just so, and it transports you. I mean, very early on in the movie, I was right there, right in that world, in that universe, there with its characters. Everything lives and breathes. It's really, you know, quite
and the
quite
jazz
fantastic.
Score is beautiful. Really, yeah, love the score. Okay, let's wind this one up then. So, Yazdi, why don't you go first?
Yeah, before I do that, there was one other thing I wanted to bring up in terms of acting, which is that, you know, very unlikely choice to have Blake Lively play that role. But I think she did a good job. I think the second half of her career of a character's trajectory is very unlike, you know, what you would expect Blake Lively to be doing. And she kind of comes through pretty well. And we saw her more recently in The Shallows.
The Shallows, yeah.
So she's having a good year for sure. I'm glad at what she's going after and, you know, not just doing the empty, pretty stuff. Yeah.
She seemed just a little out of her depth here with the caliber of people around her. I think she's better suited to the sort of stuff that we saw in The Shallows. But that might be an unfair, because I love Blake Lively. I think, you know, The Shallows is a top-notch performance. It's as good an actor can get, yeah, for that type of role. And
I could have easily interchanged the Anna Camp and Blake Lively. I think Anna Camp would have been a good,
so that scene with
a good
Anna
second
Camp,
Veronica.
Yeah, yeah, that scene with Anna Camp, you know, Woody Allen gets away with a lot of very overtly sexist stuff, and that's a very, very sexist scene. But he gets away with it because that's how things were in the 30s, you know. So I know a lot of people have had some trouble with that scene because he really doesn't treat her well. But anyway, so I think nobody quite writes like Woody Allen. I mean, when he's writing good stuff, I think he just writes so much that maybe some of it is exceptional, the other is just good. This is exceptional writing here. I just was lapping up all that dialogue in the second half of the movie. It was hilarious, especially with his family. The acting here is great. It is wistful. I'm going to give this a very stingy 8 out of 10. I think it deserves more. I would have given it even a 9 out of 10. But my only small pick with the movie is that, you know, why do all the characters have to be so adulterous? Every single one of them. And it kind of pulled me out of the movie a little bit. But all is forgiven.
You're right about what you know. Right? I mean, that's basically what it comes down to.
Maybe it strikes a little too close for comfort. But that ending corrects everything. That's a beautiful ending. So a very stingy 8 out of 10.
Russian. Sure. Well, I'm going to dismiss myself from scoring other than saying that. Of the Woody Allen movies in recent memory, this is certainly one of the better ones. I was not a big fan of Midnight in Paris, but certainly when you compare it to the one that followed immediately.
Blue Jasmine?
No, the
To
Rome with Love.
To Rome with Love. And the one last year with
Irrational Man.
Oh my word, Emma Stone.
Oh, Magic in the Moonlight.
Magic in the Moonlight, which I quite like. This movie is on a whole other level, and so you know, I think it would be a good movie. But again, I'm going to refrain from scoring simply because it would not be fair to do so based on the fact that I was really not there for the screening. I was tired.
So I'm generally mesmerized by all things Woody Allen, and I find it hard to be unbiased. I love all kinds of love. So if someone asked me to this cafe, I would run out and join them. Easily a 9 out of 10 for me.
And I love that Woody Allen has his regulars, and Parker Posey is now becoming his regular, and
Corey Stoll.
Corey Stoll is now in a lot of his movies. That's great.
Jesse Eisenberg,
even Steve Carell has been before,
Yeah. I love this day. I love the day when the Woody Allen film comes out.
Yeah.
And he's so...
Reliable,
yeah. Year after year.
Things happen nothing, in his life. Nothing, he just keeps on chugging.
But nothing on the books for next year, I'm worried. He's developing a whole new TV series with, believe it or not, Miley Cyrus.
Yeah.
As the main...
For Amazon. And this movie, by the way, was produced by Amazon Studios.
Well, it was purchased by Amazon. I think back in February it was up for... sale for distribution rights, and Amazon stepped in, paid an extraordinary fee for it. It's you know, it's up there in the like tens of millions. I mean,
his next movie has Kate Winslet and Justin Timberlake. Go figure. That'll be interesting.
Never so fails to surprise. I know. Okay, moving on. Movie number two of the week is Captain Fantastic. So I'll introduce this one briefly. And I'll do so by just reading its description, because it's kind of a hard premise to capture succinctly. But deep in the forest of the Pacific Northwest, isolated from society, a devoted father dedicates his life to transforming his 6 young children into extraordinary adults. When tragedy strikes the family, they are forced to leave this self-created parody and begin a journey to the outside world that challenges his idea of what it means to be a parent and brings into question everything he has taught them. Written and directed by Matt Ross, this movie stars Viggo Mortensen, Frank Langella, Catherine Hahn, among others. So, guys, what did you think of Captain Fantastic?
So this is one of the most unusual films of the year that holds a mirror up to the audience and dares you to judge it, whilst all the time it's actually holding the mirror up to you and judging you for what you think of the world and what is right and wrong. Brilliant.
Kirsty.
So I wanted my reaction to the movie to be exactly what Rashmi said. That was the movie I wanted. It's not the movie it was.
Oh.
I was very kindly invited on Midnight Edition to talk about, on NPR, to talk about the movies
That's
of the
right.
summer.
Yes, it was one this of the was... ones you were waiting for.
And they said, one of the questions they asked on the radio was, what is the one movie in summer that you're waiting for the most? And based on, this trailer that I had seen, this was my most highly anticipated movie of the summer. So I had, again, the curse of expectations, but I really wanted this movie to just blow me out of the water. And I think my single biggest, I have two problems with it, but the biggest problem is it at every point, it just seems to be straining for credibility. It just strains credibility. Every time things happen which would not happen in real life. So, but I think somewhere underneath this is a beautiful movie which is talking about how far is far, and from where you're sitting, something which looks offensive tells more about you than it does about that. And there's a great movie they're sitting about opposing ideologies, being modern and technologically advanced and progressive versus being somebody who is going back to nature and kind of learning from it and going back to the roots and how the two might clash. But I think it's the treatment of the material which disappointed me.
Damn Joe. Your expectations.
I know.
Joe. I'm more in line with Yazdi on this one. I mean, I think the thing that I struggled with this movie, Yazdi, you called it kind of incredulity.
Straining for credulity, yeah.
For me, it just seemed overly precious. Mm. It came across as just, the scenes were, yeah, it, 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 the, the, the the children were too smart. You know, the father-in-law was too father-in-law-like. It felt very conventional for a movie that I think was trying to break with convention. And I almost, it's interesting. This is one of those movies that, you know, there are three act structures, and there are also a plan of beats within movies where you can talk about plot points, you know, the inciting incident and how the movie... This had all of those things mapped out on a postcard. Mm. I mean, it felt like this was a by-the-numbers type plotting. Not necessarily plot, but it just felt very constructed in a way that ultimately took me away from what I think the movie was trying to say about life and the world. And I think it was trying to avoid being preachy, but in doing so came across as quite preachy. So I struggled with this. I think there were some wonderful moments in this, but ultimately it washed out towards the end to the point where I knew exactly what was going to happen at the end. I knew exactly what was going to be the the most the most difficult moment for the father. I knew what that was going to be. I knew that, you know, there's a moment involving a burglary. There's a moment involving kind of a, you know, the stealing, or I knew how that was going to work. So it all felt very kind of precious and predictable, and that saddens me, because I think there's greatness here, like Yazdi said, underneath.
So I agree with you. I think it is precious in terms of the way that the children behave and the flowers and the daisies, but I can forgive all of that, because I think at its core it's really saying what is it like to be different. Mm-hmm. But even amongst those who are different, what if you're even different to them? Like, where is your belonging? What's right? What's wrong? Almost what you said, Yazdi. So I could forgive the preciousness, because I think that message of being different and wanting something different for yourself, wanting something different for your children, came across so well that it was almost inspirational to me in some ways. And I just think it had really good acting. I mean... There's that wonderful scene where they're having dinner with Catherine Hahn. Catherine Hahn is always good in movies.
Yeah, and Steve Zahn, both of them.
And Steve Zahn, and it's difficult to act all of that, right? I mean, we all have this thing where growing up, you know, your parents always said, behave a certain way when you go to someone else's house. But then what if your ideas, or what if the way that you're raised is so different from those around you? What level do you stop at? Who do you remain true to? Being not rude and going by the way that your host is acting, or staying true to yourself? So I think those are the pieces that really resonated with me, and I just...
No, again, was without swept doubt, away by the moment that. The movie has moments that work brilliantly well, and the one that you speak of is a great example of that. So I agree with that to some extent. Yes, Lisa.
I mean, I've lived that. I mean, I've told you the story once where I had out of town guests, a very good friend of mine. She, her husband, and their two kids had come over, and we had come back from a hike, and you know, it was, I think, the day before Christmas or 2 days before Christmas or whatever. So we were going to have this nice meal at home, and they were up, they'd gone up to change and shower, and the kids came down, and I had this Martinelli's apple cider. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And I, you know, I obviously, the kids were like 2 and 4, and I wasn't going to give them wine or anything. So I poured this cold, you know, sparkling cider into their glasses, saying, we're going to drink this. And both the kids drank it, and, you know, they immediately drank it. They're like, oh, this is so tasty, so tasty. And then the parents came down, and then the wife didn't say anything, but the husband told me, he said, thanks a lot for giving our kids their first taste of carbonated drinks. We've tried to save them their whole life from having a carbonated drink. Thanks a lot for giving it without asking me. And I felt so terrible. I mean, it was an honest enough thing. I just gave them like apple juice, which was fuzzy, fizzy. And, you know, here I had really breached this thing that their parents had very actively worked towards, you know, shielding their kids from. So it's about these conflict of ideologies and how do you deal with it. And, you know, that scene with Catherine Hahn and Steve Zahn is terrific. And I think the movie as a whole has really great things to say about it. I mean, there's a great little thing that is said at one time that, you know, we don't use the word interesting. It's a non-word. It's banned. And I try to remember that in my writing. I never try to use the word interesting because it's a cop-out. You know, people say something is interesting when they don't want to say whether it's good or bad. So, I mean, there's lots of things in the movie, but I'll just give you an example of what kind of threw me off is, you know, the oldest son in this movie, you know, he has been quietly applying to universities. And it's not enough that he gets admission at Harvard. But no, he has to get admission letters from Harvard and Princeton and Dartmouth and Brown and MIT.
And Yale.
And Yale. So it's like the movie does that all the time. It's not enough. It does a lot of grandstanding. Every yes. scene is like meant to shock you a little bit, right from the opening scene. And it works fine one or two times, and then it just comes off as artificial. So it just kind of begged for, would it be real? Would somebody, in that last act that you talked about, where they steal something, you think somebody would actually steal that thing? It just seemed hard to believe that somebody could actually do it. But, you know, again, I blame the movie for being what I wanted it to be, which is very unfair. It is what it is.
I mean, I think it's making a stand. I think it's saying the way that the world lives today with our phones and our technology and our stance on what's right and what's wrong, who's to say that there isn't an alternative to that? And maybe we've walked away from it, but the inherent tragedy in the movie is related to them following that typical way of life. So I think it's quite clever in the sense that it, on the outside, it's leading you towards this thing of saying the way they're living is the right way to do it. But actually, it's it's not saying that at all. I think it's saying, here's a tragedy that's arisen because of this situation. So I think it kind of nicely presents that information to you.
Yeah.
But I agree, it's a little precious.
Yeah, again, I mean, I think of it as having a very conventional arc. And obviously this story is the father's journey, right? I mean, this essentially is his, you know, he takes a position at the beginning of the movie, and slowly the movie kind of chips away at that until, you know, he has his change. And again, it was that kind of very convention. It was too easily telegraphed from the beginning that this was the journey that this man was going to take. And I don't know. I mean, that story structure, the hero's journey, it just felt very conventional. And for a movie that starts as well as it did with a moment of, you know, kind of shock and cinematic brilliance, like, Rashmi, you completely had me in a different mindset when you said at the beginning of the movie, I'm not sure what it's about, but I think it might be like Little Miss Sunshine. And because I hadn't heard of the movie, so I sat down, and then the opening scene was
brilliant, yeah.
So different to Little Miss Sunshine.
Yeah, and I meant in its
right, in its sensibility.
It's a sensibility. Right. Yeah.
Okay, well, I heard that statement a completely different way, and so
see, you shouldn't ask me.
You know, opening scene, everything changes, and like, whoa! So it made me sit up and listen, but then, you know, it just got, it was the preciousness that I couldn't fight. I mean, the kids were reading a book called Guns, Germs, and Steel, which mm-hmm. I'm reading right now. And it's not a book that a kid would pick up, but it's saying, you know, to make a point that these kids are homeschooled and that they're, you know, that they're a cut above other kids. But I just don't see.
But I don't think it's saying they're a cut above. I think it leads you down that path, and then it clearly, at one point, tells you, "Well, you can get what you can get from a book."
It just reminds me of, you know, we've all interacted with, you know, people who leave kind of pretentious books around the place, and, you know, I'm actually thinking of parents,
yeah,
people who kind of, you know, try and create this learned environment for their children, and, you know, so our children listen to classical music, and it kind
of, no TV, only
so it kind of speaks to that, but it does so in an irritating way, not in the way that I think they were meant to go.
I mean, I think the first half hour of the movie is almost, like you said, daring you to hate it, because it makes you, I mean, none of us are parents, but I think it kind of begs you to think, at what point are you crossing the line of good parenting? And
right.
It keeps asking that question again and again. Like, and at some point I'm like, well, I wouldn't condone this, but I can understand somebody else doing it. And then at some point I'm like, no, now I cannot even condone anybody else doing it. So I think if you look at it from that parenting perspective, the whole movie, it raises some very, very good issues. And like I said, there's a great movie here about conflicting ideologies. There was a movie at Tribeca last year, and I'm hoping it shows up on Netflix Soon it's a movie called Hungry Hearts with Adam Driver in it, and it's about this guy who meets this lovely Italian girl. They get married, they have a kid, and then after the kid is born, he realizes that his wife is completely against anything chemical or artificial, and she literally starves their infant, and this little child becomes the battleground for conflicting ideologies between the husband and the wife, and it goes to a really dark place, and it's a great area for a movie to explore in terms of what do you do when two people have two ideologies which are both very sustainable but completely diametrically opposite to each other. How do you resolve that? And I think the movie touches on that. I just found it hard to get past, you know, its grand gesture. So right. I think this movie would have benefited from a lighter touch. We didn't speak about the acting, but Viggo Mortensen is so good.
Yeah,
just heartbreakingly good. And I'm going to score it 7 out of 10. I wanted it to be a 9.
Joe?
Yeah, no, I mean, look, in the moment, this movie... It starts off really well, and then it starts to kind of unravel itself for the reasons that Yazdi's mentioned. I mean, I don't really have much more to say about that. So, again, I ended up feeling ultimately disappointed with the way that the movie played out. You know, its plot point seemed conventional and obvious to me. So, 7 out of 10. It could have been much more with very little.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you could almost recut this movie to get it to where it needs to be. I mean, that's literally how close they were from greatness.
For me, I think this is a really good movie that's super smart at every turn, but it's also entertaining at the same time. I think it has the appropriate balance of emotionality and fun with true smartness. Because I think it is holding this mirror up to us. For me, it's easily an 8 out of 10. I feel like I'm being a bit stingy, but 8 out of 10.
You know, I wanted Mike Myo to watch this movie. Because I think if you're a particular kind of person who is like back to nature, self-reliance, we should, you know, kind of, you know, if you should have the ability to self-sustain.
Well, why don't you do this?
You shouldn't take
him and buy a ticket and watch it again.
Yeah, like you shouldn't take anything from the world. You should be giving to the world constantly. If you have that kind of philosophy, this movie will really resonate for you, I think.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Well, I'm certainly not the nature girl in this group, so but I certainly got a lot out of the movie. Yeah.
But how great that somebody's made this movie. It's so atypical, you know,
I love it.
Hollywood movie. And first time director too, good for him.
It feels like a kind of a film festival movie, if you know what I mean.
And it won the audience prize at Sundance.
Okay, yeah. So that seems to me the kind of audience that this movie seeks. And, you know, you'll know what I mean by that if you've been to a film festival.
Yeah, not everyone. This is not a universally recommendable film, right? I mean, if you like Iron Man, this is not going to be your cup of tea.
All right, we are out of time, so let's wrap up. Mail at moviewallers.com, twitter.com/moviewallers, instagram.com/moviewallers, facebook.com/moviewallers, everything.com/moviewallers. Find us. Speak to us. We want to hear from you. Until our next episode, two new movies, two little time. Good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.